I'm Tara Mergener. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, plea for peace. A day after a Catholic church is struck in Gaza, Pope Leo gets a phone call, who he spoke with and what he said. Plus, Catholic and Orthodox leaders in the Holy Land are also responding. The rare act they took today. In Washington, the House of Representatives hands President Trump another big win, and it means big cuts in funding. We have the details. And gone, but not forgotten.
No disappointment at all. It's all powerful anyway.
Why Jubilee year pilgrims are still enjoying Rome, even though the Pope is out of town. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
And thank you for being with us. Our top story tonight, Israel's prime minister reaches out to Pope Leo XIV a day after a deadly church attack in Gaza. On X, the prime minister's office posted this message saying that Mr. Netanyahu expressed Israel's regret for the tragic incident in which stray ammunition accidentally struck the Holy Family Church in Gaza. This comes as world leaders all decry the attack that killed three civilians on the church grounds. EWTN Vatican correspondent Paola Flynn has more on the conversation between the Pope and the Prime Minister and how the church is responding in Gaza.
Good evening, Tara. This morning, the Holy Father received a call from Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, during which he renewed his appeal for negotiations and ceasefire in Gaza.
The Holy Father once again expressed his concern over the dramatic humanitarian situation of the population in Gaza, for which he said children, the elderly and the sick are paying the heartbreaking cost. According to a Vatican statement, the Holy Father also reiterated the urgency of protecting places of worship, and above all, the faithful and all people in Palestine and Israel. Earlier in the day, the Pope also called Cardinal Pier Battista Pizzaballa, the Latin Patriarch of Jerusalem, to express his closeness, care, prayer, support, and desire to do everything possible to achieve an end to this tragedy. Cardinal Pizzaballa had visited the parish earlier in the morning today, along with the Greek Orthodox Patriarch Theophilos III, to stand alongside those affected by recent events, according to a statement from the Latin Patriarchate of Jerusalem. They partner with humanitarian groups to deliver hundreds of tons of food, first aid kits, and medical supplies for Christians and other families in Gaza, and to ensure the evacuation of those injured in the attack to medical facilities outside of Gaza for treatment. The Cardinal shared in an interview with Vatican News that during their phone call, Pope Leo repeatedly stated that it is time to stop this slaughter and that what has happened is unjustifiable. Caritas Jerusalem staff in Gaza stressed that the warnings of Father Romanelli, the parish priest who was injured in the attack and had been pushing everyone to stay inside due to escalating danger, helped save lives. The organization explained that if Father Gabriel Romanelli hadn't warned them to stay indoors, they could have lost 50 to 60 people on that day, and it would have been a massacre. Separately, the patriarchs and heads of churches in Jerusalem also released a joint statement to express their solidarity with people sheltering in the Gaza Catholic parish and to denounce the desecration of holy sites. The church leaders assured the community in Gaza of their prayers and called upon international community to push for an immediate ceasefire that leads to an end to the war. In Rome, Paola Flynn, EWTN News Nightly.
The attack on the church has brought to the forefront the relationship between Christians living in the Gaza Strip and their neighbors. We'd like to bring on Joseph Hezboon, Regional Director at the Pontifical Mission in the Jerusalem Field Office. Joseph, thank you so much for joining us. First of all, what is the Pontifical Mission doing for the people of Gaza?
Recently, we've been providing psychosocial support for mothers and children through various local partners that we worked with for so many years. We've been providing food, water, food parcels. Recently, we also had a chance of purchasing fresh vegetables from the local market in Gaza, people going to the distribution centers and getting killed just for some kilos of flour, which is really tragic among the various tragedies that our people in Gaza are living.
I think it's important to note, Joseph, that it's not just Catholics who were hurt in the church attack. Does that change perceptions or some of the narrative here?
Definitely. The church is hosting Christian, Catholic, and Orthodox families, as well as Muslims, In addition to some 70 handicapped people, from children to elderly. And so, yes, a lot of the people are affected. And but this attack on the church is gaining a lot of solidarity internationally, which is very good. In addition to the ongoing campaigns to shed light on what is happening in Gaza, this will hopefully lead to strengthen the pressure on finding a solution and putting an end to the war.
Can you give us an overview of the Christian culture in Gaza, both before and during the war?
It was a vibrant community, reaching out to everybody with excellent relationships, especially also through the NACC and its various clinics and centers and vocational training centers. Unfortunately, during the war, many of the institutions were targeted and now they are unoperational. The Rosary Sisters School is damaged, and the sisters had to leave after months of waiting for an end to the war. The Latin Patriarchate Holy Family Church was totally destroyed. The YMCA is dysfunctional. The Arab Orthodox Cultural Center destroyed. And so, unfortunately, we're not sure how things will look after the war. It all depends on how many will remain in Gaza. I am confident that many have taken already the decision that Gaza is their homeland and they will continue to live there and, God forbid, die there. And we have seen that, unfortunately, three of our Christian community died in the attack yesterday on the church. So this is very tragic, but what can we do? And our message has always been to the youth, especially, because we had a university scholarship fund for Christian youth. We always told them, as long as you see in Gaza a homeland, we will support you and we will provide everything that we can so that you can have a dignified life and see a future for yourselves in Gaza. If you decide that no longer have a future in Gaza, that's your decision. We respect it, and we ask for God's blessing for you wherever you decide to go.
And Joseph, obviously, very critical work you are doing. Thank you for joining us. We appreciate it.
With pleasure. Thank you, Tara.
And we also know that at Family Church, Holy Family Church, is a Catholic group of volunteer, Caritas Jerusalem. Their members were there when the church was hit. And joining us now is Anton Asfar, director of Caritas Jerusalem. Anton, give us your take on this devastating attack on the Holy Family Church in Gaza.
Well, thank you, Tara, first for hosting me over here at EWTN. The situation is really very terrible in Gaza, especially in the Holy Family parish. Yesterday, early morning, we had phone calls coming from Gaza parish, from our colleagues. Actually, we have a medical emergency clinic just adjacent to the parish, and we have plenty of staff sheltering at the parish itself and at the St. Porphyrius Church, the Orthodox Church. And the news came and we didn't know what is happening exactly and how this happened. But afterwards, we understood that people were injured. It was right exactly after the Mass, 9 o'clock Mass in the morning. They finished the Mass. Father Gabriele Romanelli, the parish priest, has urged the people to enter the rooms, to stay in the rooms, to lock themselves, because there was military operations out there for around 2 weeks, and we have suspended as Caritas our operations in that emergency clinic. But a couple of the people stayed outside. Two men stayed under the tent that Caritas is running as a psychosocial support program. And during the shelling to the church, there was shrapnels and debris that injured people that were staying over there.
What is the staff of the church doing?
Well, the staff of the church is trying to be with the children, to care for the children first and foremost, to pray in the church, to provide life-saving services to the community at large outside. The church is trying to distribute food, medicine, medical supplies to the community at large whenever there is goods are coming into Gaza. As you know, since March 2nd, the humanitarian corridor has been totally shut down, so we can't bring in food or health supplies to the Gaza Strip.
Anton, one last question. Can the church be rebuilt?
Well, first and foremost, we should rebuild souls. The church is the souls. We should serve souls. Yes, the church, we have the means to rebuild it, but we want to build first and save lives. We want to be allowed to enter Gaza and save lives and provide services, life-saving services to the community at large.
Anton, thank you. Very important work. We're praying for all of you.
Thank you, Tara.
Clashes between Druze armed groups and members of Bedouin clans have broken out once again in Syria. Tens of thousands have been displaced in the wake of the violence this week. Government forces intervened in the conflict earlier in the week to try to restore order. Israel later on launched strikes against Syrian forces in defense of the Druze. Daniel Flesch of the Heritage Foundation says Israel's measures are necessary.
What we're seeing in Syria right now is two things. Israel is extending its deterrence across the border into southern Syria. It wants to make sure that its territory is secure from jihadi gangs that are coming south. In addition, it's trying to protect the Druze community there in southern Syria. Israel has a prominent Druze community and is doing what it can to protect their brethren across the border in southern Syria.
All right. Another big win for President Trump and Republican lawmakers. The GOP-controlled House followed the Senate in approving a package rescinding $9 billion for foreign aid and public broadcasting, sending it to the president's desk. After the vote, House Speaker Mike Johnson said this is just the beginning.
We want to cut spending, fraud, waste, and abuse. That will be an ongoing quest of ours. We had some of the DOGE cuts that were involved here. We had many of them in the Big Beautiful Bill, many of the executive orders. We want to codify those. We want to cut more spending. We want to bring the control of the government back to the hands of the people.
And the White House says it plans to send to Congress more requests to take back money from congressionally approved programs. And Republican leaders are already talking about another reconciliation bill, this one dealing with entitlements. As the president celebrates those $9 billion in cuts, the White House is also cheering legislation the administration says is going to make America the crypto capital of the world. Today, a signing ceremony for the Genius Act took place. But at the same time, the president is also threatening to sue a major newspaper, which he blasted on social media. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen.
Tara, as the president racks up legislative wins, he's prepping tonight for a potential legal showdown with the Wall Street Journal newspaper, which he calls a pile of garbage.
At the White House, President Donald Trump discusses the legislative triumphs he's now signing into law.
This is really a big day. This afternoon, we take a giant step to cement American dominance of global finance and crypto technology as we sign the landmark Genius Act into law. So congratulations to everybody. This is a big deal.
While in a celebratory mood in the East Room, on social media, the president on the attack, writing, "The Wall Street Journal printed a fake letter, supposedly to Epstein. These are not my words, not the way I talk. Also, I don't draw pictures. I told Rupert Murdoch it was a scam, that he shouldn't print this fake story." The president referring to the Journal's reporting of his alleged involvement with a sexually suggestive birthday gift to Jeffrey Epstein, years before Epstein was first arrested. The administration's handling of records in the Epstein sex trafficking case has come under fire by some demanding more transparency. Epstein died by suicide awaiting trial on federal charges of trafficking of underage girls. Thursday, President Trump's press secretary telling reporters,
"The Democrats had control of this building, the White House, for 4 years, and they didn't do a dang thing when it came to transparency in regards to Jeffrey Epstein and his heinous crimes. It was this president who directed the Department of Justice and the Attorney General to do an exhaustive review of all files related to Jeffrey Epstein, which they did. The president has been transparent. He has followed through on his promises to the American people.
The president also posting, based on the ridiculous amount of publicity given to Jeffrey Epstein, I've asked Attorney General Pam Bondi to produce any and all pertinent grand jury testimony subject to court approval. Earlier this week, the president told reporters,
it's all been a big hoax. It's perpetrated by the Democrats, and some stupid Republicans and foolish Republicans fall into the net, and so they try and do the Democrats' work. The Democrats are good for nothing other than these hoaxes. They're bad for policy.
The president has never been accused of any misconduct in connection with Epstein. And he also posted on Truth Social, if there was a smoking gun on Epstein, why didn't the Dems use it? And the president adds, because they had nothing. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
Owen, thank you. Well, prior to the rescissions bill passing, the House was held up for hours after GOP leaders were trying to find a way to respond to demands from their own ranks. Several House Republicans sided with Democrats demanding more transparency regarding the Jeffrey Epstein sex trafficking case. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales joins us in the studio with more about what happened, Eric.
Well, good evening, Tara. You know, bottom line, lawmakers on both sides of the aisle tell me that they want assurances that Attorney General Pam Bondi and her Justice Department will release the Epstein files to the public. Since Epstein was found dead in his New York jail cell back in 2019, following his arrest on sex trafficking charges, he has loomed large among conservatives and conspiracy theorists who now have lashed out to President Trump and the DOJ for declining to release more files in the case.
Wants to release all credible information and evidence, and that's in furtherance of his goal and what he stated. That's the position of all House Republicans, everybody in the party that I know. We trust the American people, they can draw their own conclusions.
Why don't we just release it and deal with it? If it's embarrassing because it's not substantive, that's fine. If it's embarrassing because somebody's implicated, that's fine. We just need to solve it.
The resolution actually carries no real legal weight to force the DOJ to act, but it does show the growing demand for greater transparency. Democrats say the public has a right to know.
This is very simple. The American people simply need to know the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth as it relates to this situation.
This is yet another example of the powerful protecting the powerful, and the reason this story won't go away it's because at core, this is about underage women being raped and sexually assaulted. Attorney General Pam Bondi needs to release Jeffrey Epstein's client list or she needs to resign.
Some Republicans are blaming the Biden administration for not taking action earlier.
This country is sick of child molesters and they're sick of pandering. And look, the Democrats had this thing for 4 years under Biden. And they didn't do anything, and now they're just making a political issue of it.
However, several senators don't think anything new will come out of the files being released.
I think if there were anything explosive out there about other people, we've known it by now. And there's some folks that have taken this to an area where there seems to be no factual basis for it. So I'm okay.
It is important to note that the Epstein resolution, backed by Republican Congressman Thomas Massie and Democrat Ro Khanna, could potentially be voted on next week. You may recall that Thomas Massie has been a thorn in President Trump's side. Trump has promised to work against Massie in the upcoming November election. Tara, back to you.
All right, Eric, thank you. Well, we have a lot more still to come on EWTN News Nightly, including pulling the plug. CBS is ending The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, and we have the details. And why the faithful in Mexico City are speaking out. Welcome back. The European Union and Great Britain are ramping up pressure on Russia over its war with Ukraine. The new sanctions from the EU aim to deprive Russia of its energy revenue. This includes a lower price cap for Moscow's crude oil barrels. The UK, for its part, has sanctioned Russia's military intelligence service linked to a deadly 2022 theater bombing in Ukraine that killed 600 civilians. A federal court has blocked a controversial law in Washington state that would require priests to violate the seal of confession. A district judge said in the ruling that there was no question the law burdened the free exercise of religion. The order now bars the Washington state government from enforcing the law. The ruling comes after Washington's bishop sued the governor, attorney general, and more than three dozen prosecutors over the controversial measure. Now to Mexico, where the faithful are speaking out after the government projected pro-abortion messages on the walls of the Metropolitan Cathedral in Mexico City. The incident took place as part of an annual show organized by the capital city's government. For roughly 2 weeks, the National Palace and Cathedral have transformed into screens narrating the history of the capital. The show includes references to recent events, including a same-sex so-called pride march and an image with a sign that reads "Safe Abortion." The cathedral says it was not consulted about those images. The U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops is seeking a full exemption from a federal abortion rule passed by the Biden administration. The USCCB is asking a federal appeals court to block the government from enforcing all of an abortion accommodation that is part of Equal Employment Opportunity Commission workplace rules. The bishops currently have a partial exemption, but not one that covers abortions due to medical conditions. Numerous other Catholic groups have also sued the EEOC for its abortion accommodation rule and were given full relief. It is the end of an era in television as CBS ends The Late Show with Stephen Colbert next May. The network says the cancellation was made purely based on financial concerns and was not related to the show's performance or content. Colbert shared the news with the audience during his Thursday show taping. The host, who is Catholic, took over The Late Show 10 years ago in 2015 following the retirement of David Letterman. And up next on EWTN News Nightly, it has a nice ring to it. A cathedral in Japan is one step closer to reopening nearly 80 years after the atomic bomb was dropped. Plus, how has the Pope Leo's absence from Rome affected Jubilee events? The answer may surprise you. In Nagasaki, Japan, blesses a bell that is the final piece of its restoration after being destroyed nearly 80 years ago by a U.S. atomic bomb. The relative of an atomic bomb survivor and the grandson of one of the Manhattan Project workers are shown testing the St. Kateri Bell of Hope. It was the final piece of restoration of the Urakami Cathedral. The bell is a copy of the original. It was paid for and delivered on Thursday by a group of Americans. The Holy See is calling on the United Nations to protect families and the most vulnerable. In his speech earlier this week, Archbishop Gabriel Caccia pointed out deep inequalities in access to health care and mental health services. He urged integrated policies linking health, education, and poverty. He also noted the importance of families as a space for relationships. And even though Pope Leo is enjoying his summer holidays at Castel Gandolfo, the 2025 Jubilee does continue in Rome. EWTN Vatican journalist Benedict Settergren has more.
July is typically a quieter month in Rome. With the Pope spending time at his summer residence in Castel Gandolfo, no general audiences taking place, and no major Jubilee events scheduled, the city has settled into a slower rhythm. But how has this affected the pace of the Jubilee and the flow of pilgrims?
Well, I think we knew for July that there weren't going to be a lot of big events. It's new, again, that the Pope is going to Castel Gandolfo, and I think that's a beautiful tradition, and it gives people a chance to get out of Rome. So the people that are already planning to be here in July, they're like, oh, now the Pope's at Castel Gandolfo, we'll take the train, it's like 45 minutes, and we'll see this other town. And so it hasn't really switched up too much in the Jubilee, I don't think. I think it's just given people more opportunities.
Mountain Batorek, who founded the Catholic Traveler and has been leading pilgrimages for 20 years all over Europe and the Holy Land, explained to EWTN that despite the summer slowdown, the flow of pilgrims hasn't come to a halt. Many still flock to Rome to experience the spiritual richness the city offers during the Holy Year.
It is absolutely gorgeous all around, beautiful artwork, just absolutely stunning. And there are so many pilgrims from all around the world coming to see around here. It is absolutely stunning, one of the most incredible things I've seen in a very long time.
was an important time for the church and an important time for me also. It's our 33rd wedding anniversary, so we thought it'd be really cool to spend it here on this day.
Has been amazing. It's been amazing for my faith and like an amazing experience just to see everything, the history, everything passed down from generation to generation.
The Pope spending his summer vacation hasn't dampened the spirit of the pilgrims, who continue to find their time in Rome a meaningful and memorable Jubilee experience.
Well, no disappointment at all. It's all powerful anyway, with the art and the sculpture and the history and all that we saw today. It's powerful.
Even though he's not here, you can still feel him spiritually just whenever you walk in and whenever you do a little prayer.
Still, many look forward to the Pope's return to Rome next Monday.
People want to come, they want to see the Pope, they want to go through the holy doors, but if the Pope isn't doing the masses or the audiences, then that kind of puts a damper on things and you have to readjust. I mean, we saw that when Pope Francis couldn't do the big Jubilee masses and we would have a cardinal fill in. I mean, it's still beautiful, it's still mass, people are still gathering for a great thing, but when the Pope's present, I mean, that makes all the difference.
In Rome, Benedictia de Grian, EWTN News Nightly.
A special time indeed. And we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tara Mergener. Good night and God bless.